Today's show is sponsored by Quater. Quater is the new footwear and accessory brand by Travis Matthew. It offers incredible comfort and performance without the gaudy and distracting branding that you'll find on most performance shoes. Quater is committed to making products that fit seamlessly into your everyday style. Products filled with useful technology that can enhance any look while providing unparalleled stability all day long. So check out quater.com/SBNation to learn more. That's quater.com/SBNation.
And welcome back to From Complex to Queens, Amazing Ed News Monthly Podcast. I'm Steve Saipa, and I'm joined this week by the whole team, Lucas and Ken. How you guys doing?
Good.
Yeah, pretty good.
Enjoying watching the ice fall down outside.
Yeah.
Not great, Bob.
I mean, I love the winter weather. I don't know what y'all are complaining about.
It's okay in low doses.
Nah, give me those 3 feet. Give me 3 feet of snow. Do it.
Right,
chaos.
Well, that's true. Either I don't like none of the middle ground. Either let it be a light snowfall and it goes away pretty quickly, or let it be a blizzard catastrophe.
Yep. I agree.
All right. So let's start promote extend trade. And this one's going to kind of be a little... It's going to touch a nerve, I think.
Uh-oh.
But I was looking at stuff that happened on today's date, and in 1859, John Brown was hanged for his raid on the armory in Harper's Ferry, West Virginia.
More history references. I like it.
Yes, we're a very educational podcast. And Harper's Ferry is like one of my favorite places. Have you either guys ever been there before?
No, I haven't.
No.
There's like nothing there, but it's just one of those places that like when you go there, it's like just so peaceful and serene, and there's like nothing, no worries while you're there, one of those kinds of places.
So like literally the opposite of living in the city.
Yes, exactly.
All right.
But, you know, so West Virginia, they have two baseball teams. There's the Short A affiliate Black Bears.
Sorry.
And then there's the Low A West Virginia Power. And that's the Black Bears are Pittsburgh Pirates affiliate. And the Power are Mariners affiliate. And the Black Bears didn't exactly have anyone interesting on their team, but the Power did.
Oh, so, no.
According to... MLB's list of the Mariners' top prospects, they have the West Virginia Power have the Mariners 1, 2, and 3 prospects on their team this year.
Oh no!
So if you happen to have a minor league team of those three prospects, who would you extend, who would you promote, and who would you trade? There is right-handed pitcher Logan Gilbert. There's outfielder Julio Rodriguez, and there's one other outfielder.
Got like a funny last name.
Yeah, it begins with a K. I'm not really sure how to pronounce it.
Evan White is playing the outfield these days.
Hmm. But yeah, so of Julio Rodriguez, Logan Gilbert, and Jared Kelenic, who would you promote, extend, or trade?
We're just
kind of starting with a blank system here.
The trade is very easy. You trade Gilbert.
Yeah, he's a pitcher. He has relief risk.
Doesn't have as much upside as the other two anyway.
He's got a good fastball. I mean, I think that there is some upside there. But
yeah,
DeGrom-ish. Exactly. I don't know how likely he is to reach that upside.
Most people who are DeGrom-ish in the minor leagues become they become Paul Sewald instead. You know, like that's the more common DeGrom outcome, if we're being honest.
Yeah.
It is the truth.
It's a pitcher and then
the Julio versus are, Kelenic, yeah, that's tough.
Is actually an interesting one, yeah. Mm. I think BP put them both as roll sevens.
I mean, realistically, you're flipping a coin. I'm tempted to say that Julio probably has a higher ceiling
in
terms of power output. I'm not sure what they've said about his defense. Is he a sure to stick in center guy? Like, Kelenic's a pretty safe bet to stick in center, I think. I don't know what they've said about Julio, though.
I think Kelenic is the higher
defense,
slightly higher floor overall package, whereas Rodriguez possibly has the higher ceiling if realized, but
like
you said, it's a toss-up.
Well, Rodriguez is like, even if he can't hack it, like, he's either like a monster center fielder or an above-average defender in a corner who's also a monster at the plate. And can, like, hack it in center in his early 20s or whatever. I think you extend Julio and then promote Kelenic.
I'm going to do the opposite, I think. Offensively, they're comparable. Mm-hmm. I like betting on the hit tool here instead of the power. Mm-hmm. Although I guess you're talking about maybe half a grade, if that. And I'll take the guy who sticks up the middle.
Well, totally, totally valid.
Yep. Again, I don't think there's no right answer here.
No. Especially without
they're
any
both
of
very
us,
good.
Without any of us being professional scouts and none of us really having in-person looks or anything. So, like.
Yeah, look. I know Jared raved about him.
Kelenic or Julio?
Kelenic.
Yeah.
And I think he saw both of them at the same. I could be wrong, though. Mm. His write-up was glowing of Kelenic.
Yeah, I remember the write-up. But, I mean, I've seen that level of write-up about Rodriguez, too. So, like...
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to trade Kelenic because I'm a sucker for pain.
You monster.
Did you come up with this whole one just for, like, that line?
No, it just...
Okay.
Basically, how I do it, I'll just type in the day on Wikipedia, and I'll just go see all the interesting things that, you know, have happened on this specific day. And then I saw this about West Virginia, and I was just thinking, like, how is baseball relevant to West Virginia in any way, shape, or form? A lot of times, it's just who was born in West Virginia or whatever, but there was nobody...
So making a Kelenic trade joke was just a happy accident.
Yeah, no, it just kind of came up. And it just happened to be that,
don't make mistakes.
You know, it just happened to be that the West Virginia Power had a really good team this year.
Yeah,
they really did. I was talking to John Troopin recently about that. That they had literally everybody interesting for at some point in time.
And also Ed White. Dunn was there, right?
Evan White wasn't there.
He wasn't? Okay, no.
Yeah,
I'm wrong.
Neither
no,
was Dunn. They both went
yeah,
straight
to advanced.
Really? I thought they said Dunn. Okay, my mistake then. I thought Dunn was down there for, like, a week.
But, yeah, that's a good team and a good system.
Yep. Who else do they even have in that system at this point? I'm trying to Kyle Lewis, but he was probably in the higher minors. Is there anyone else?
Not from the West Virginia Power. I think that was mostly just Kelenic and Rodriguez and Gilbert for a hot second. Mm-hmm. But they also have I like George Kirby a little bit out of the draft. I think he ends up one of the better, you know, low ceiling college guys. I think he ends up being like the best version of that from this past draft.
I know the Mets were getting buzz on him, and I did not really want that, but
no.
Yeah, no, I generally want to be a little gun shy going forward on, you know, college pitchers who don't necessarily have much upside, but. As far as that profile goes, he's probably my bet for the good one.
That is about everyone interesting, so yeah. Unless you really like Sheffield still, but meh.
He wasn't too exciting to begin with.
No, he wasn't.
He was, but he wasn't. All right, well, as you can clearly see, the Mariners have a stacked farm system. Whereas the Mets don't.
That's polite, a polite way of putting it.
Right. That's not to say, though, that there's no talent in the system. The last couple of weeks, obviously, we've been kind of reviewing every stop along the way. Syracuse, Binghamton, St. Lucie, Columbia, Brooklyn, Kingsport. And we haven't really gone over the GCL Mets or the DSL Mets. I am not a fan of looking at those three teams. There's two teams in the DSL, and then there's the GCL team. I'm not a fan of analyzing, you know, their seasons as teams, because there's just a lot of...
Steve, are you telling me that DSL stats aren't particularly meaningful? I'm shocked by this.
Yeah, there you go.
I think you can remove particularly from that.
Telling me a bunch of random kids of varying skill levels playing on poorly maintained fields.
Isn't it? It's also that they basically play year round, but they only keep statistics for like a 2 month window.
This is the season. It's the only one that counts.
Yeah. I mean, there's no meaningful difference really in between a GCL and, you know, extended spring training in May, let's say.
It's like a huge variance in the talent level. It's not
It's partially instructional, in a way that the upper levels aren't. So.
But, you know, my... What's a good way of putting it? Not disdain. That's a little too strong. But my preference for really not putting too much of a spotlight on how those teams did doesn't mean that there aren't talented guys on those teams. So this week, we're just going to go over a bunch of players that are on the DSL teams or on the GCL teams this year. And there are quite a few, you know, interesting names. Some of them are going to appear on our forthcoming 2020 top prospect list. Others are going to be on our list of, you know, names to be aware of, other names of note, whatever you want to call it, after we publish our list. And other guys are just guys that, you know, aren't exactly there yet, but they might be in a year or two, three, whatever. So, obviously there are a combination of ways to, there's a bunch of different ways that a player ends up on the GCL Mets or the DSL Mets, either be it by draft or by international free agency. So I'll just break it down by draft and international free agency. And we'll go over some of the guys that have been drafted in the last year, two or three, who have not made it up to Kingsport yet. So we'll just go in alphabetical order here. And the first guy we'll talk about is Jace Beck, who was drafted this season. His father, he was a receiver at Oklahoma State, Lynn Beck. Jace didn't play football like his dad. He went into baseball, and he put up some good numbers at Tuttle High School, and he transferred, going from Tuttle to Blanchard, and he continued his dominance on the mound there. And in his senior year, he went a perfect 13-0 with a 0.99 ERA in 70.2 innings, striking out 134 guys. And the Mets drafted him in the 22nd round of the draft this year. And he had a commitment to a community college, local community college. He was given a $125,000 bonus, and he went with the Mets. And he appeared in 6 games this year for the GCL Mets. And he posted a 3.38 ERA in 8 innings, allowing 7 hits, walking 1, and striking out 10. The biggest, most notable thing about Beck is that he's 6'9", which is really, really tall.
Yeah. It's a nice height, you know?
His fastball does not reflect his height. It only sits, you know, high 80s, low 90s, and tops out about 92. But he is only 19. You know, he was 18. He just turned 19 at the end of the year. So still young, even though he's extremely tall. And really, the best thing about that, I guess, is the fact that even though he is tall, he really has not had command problems, either in high school as an amateur or in his brief time as a professional, because a lot of times taller guys, you know, they have problems repeating their deliveries because there's just a lot of moving parts. But Beck hasn't really had this problem, and that's a good thing. And, you know, them probably, you know, at 6'9", he's probably not going to be growing and adding much on his fastball. So hopefully he's going to be able to refine his secondary stuff a little bit. He throws a low 70s curve and then a mid-70s changeup. So he's an exciting guy for me, I think.
I wonder if there's some mechanical tweaks the Mets can get him to do, or just better strength training. Because even if he repeats decently well and his control is okay, I'm sure there are inefficiencies in his delivery with a frame that big at this age. It doesn't seem impossible for him to add some additional velocity.
No, I don't think that it's crazy to say that he can go from topping out at 92 or so to probably sitting about 92. I don't think that he's going to be going from.
Yeah, like, you typically see that with guys when they finish their draft year and then move towards being a professional for like the first time, is that they settle in a little closer to the top of their velo band and you get less variance.
And I feel like he also. Go ahead, sorry.
So he also has, since he's so tall, he has that Chris Young thing going on where just the pitch appears faster than it actually is to hitters because he has more wingspan or whatever you want to call it.
Does he get good extension towards the, I haven't seen any videos of him pitching. I mean, that's something DeGrom does extraordinarily well, is extend towards home plate. So,
and it's a physical advantage that he has that other guys don't, so I would assume that the coaches will work with him to make sure that he maximizes that advantage.
I feel like he also went, he was a draft pick this year, right? So I feel I feel like he went a little under the radar with all the hype around, oh, we landed Allen. He's not like a nice, post round 10 high school pitcher pickup here.
He's in the spot where normally they would pick like, you know, the Clevelands, the Planks,
Yeah, you're trying to take like five Hutchinson's or six in every draft.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have a bit of a theory on this kind of player, and you guys can disagree or just tell me I'm an idiot, which is perfectly likely. I feel like with the high upside pitching guys like the Allens of the world, I want someone who's maybe striking people out or has that level of upside. But with these like lower tier lottery guys, the polish aspect seems a little bit more appealing, if that makes sense. Like if you're gonna gamble, like if you're making a high end gamble, go for the pure upside. If you're making a lower end gamble, like just spending $125,000 on a late round high school pick, then the appeal of the decent control, not a blazing fastball, but a good frame, good mechanics, like that's interesting to me as more of a polished piece.
Yeah, I mean, that's what differentiates a guy going, you know, in the, what was he, the 22nd round this year, as opposed to, let's say, you know, the 10th or the 3rd or something like that. You know, he's not polished in all aspects of the game, unlike an Allen or, you know, whomever, a high school pitcher that is getting drafted way earlier. And, yeah, you definitely want to see, it's like anything, when you have a guy this raw, you're betting more on a particular tool or so than just the overall package, and you assume that, you know, you can teach the rest and just build off of that one tool that the player has. In this case, it's size, you know, an okay fastball, okay command of everything, and you just hope that everything else comes later. Another guy that's built in a similar mold to Beck is Saul Gonzalez. He was born in Puerto Rico, and he moved to the U.S. in his high school days. He attended Monteverde Academy down in Florida. And he was a two-way player at first, but the coaches there saw that he really was a lot better as a pitcher than as a position player, so they focused all of his training on pitching. And he basically went from having a fastball that hovered around 90 as a two-way player when he was a junior, in his junior season, to having focused completely as a pitcher and having a mid-90s fastball as a senior. And in his last year there at Monteverde Academy, he went 8-0, and he posted a 1.50 ERA in 42 innings, allowing 18 hits, walking 16, and striking out 83. And the Mets selected him in the 23rd round of the 2018 draft. And he had a commitment to Alabama State, but he forewent it, and he signed with the Mets for a bonus of $175,000. Which is the second most that any player got that round. And he appeared in three games that year. He posted, three games and 2.1 innings. So the numbers aren't really important because that's such a small sample size. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, he did not play in any games this year because he was injured. But like Beck, he's a real tall kid. He's 6'7". And he has a little bit more velocity than Beck does. His fastball, you know, tops out about 94. He throws from a slingy low three quarters delivery. So he has crossfire. He has a little bit of extra life on the fastball because of that. But unlike Beck, he doesn't have really any secondaries that are particularly developed. He has kind of like a sweepy, slurvy, slider curveball thing. But that's about it. And a crude changeup that, you know, a lot of kind of high school pitchers mix in occasionally that's really not that great. And it's more just kind of a slow fastball than anything. But he's another guy, you know, similar to Beck. There's a standout, you know, tool in the fastball. And you just kind of want to see, you know, a more complete pitcher built around that.
His mechanics look pretty relievery to me. Just watching, just especially with that arm slot, I feel like as he moves up, lefties are just going to blast him.
Yeah, it's very, he exposes himself a lot and the ball.
I also feel like this dude's got legs for days and doesn't use them a ton. Though it's tough in the angle I've seen.
It's kind of like a shot put.
Yeah.
It's reminiscent of Molina in a way.
Oh, it's not as bad. It's not that bad.
Not that bad, but.
He looks a little bit like Otania's look this year.
A little bit, yeah. Molina would like actively use his legs against himself. He would stop himself on his front leg. Like, what are you doing?
Backwards.
I mean, this dude's got some serious legs, though. Maybe you can tweak his mechanics a little bit here and get him to use those a bit more, drive a little bit more. Feels like something you should be able to do with a developmental guy.
Steve, what was his injury?
Don't know. I was not able to track that down. It wasn't Tommy John or anything like that. So he should be pitching this upcoming season.
Yeah, this guy's a reliever.
100%.
But that's a great poll. Where in the draft was he taken? 23rd round of the draft. That's a pretty good poll. So.
Yeah, I mean, in the 23rd round, when you're able to select, you know, prep kids that are touching, you know, mid-90s, that works. All right, another guy here is Zach Hammer.
80 grade name.
Yep, of course. He's from North Carolina. And at Alexander Central High School, he had a pretty good record, 2.75 ERA with 67 strikeouts over the course of the season. And the Mets selected him in the 21st round of the 2018 draft. So that's right before they selected Gonzalez, who was 23rd round. And he signed for $285,000, which is basically more than double any other player that was selected in that round that year. And he was still young. He was still 17 years old when he was assigned to the GCL Mets. He appeared for 3 games for them, and then he returned to GCL this season. And in 31 innings, he posted a 2.90 ERA with 25 hits, 18 walks, and 27 strikeouts. Obviously, that's a lot of walks, 18. 27 strikeouts, though, it's pretty good. It's about almost, 9, okay, per 9. And he's 6'2", 165 pounds, so there's still a lot of projection left. And he's going to need it because his fastball sits about, high 80s to low 90s, like 89 to 92 or so. So he could use a little bit of velocity. And he has some pretty rough mechanics. He just kind of is inconsistent when he releases the ball. So, I mean, that's something that could be worked on because the delivery is nothing too crazy. It's pretty simple. And, of course, true to his name, he complements his fastball with a power curveball.
It would have been so disappointing if he threw a slider instead of a curveball.
I know. I would hope that his coaches are specifically like, listen, kid, you need to do this.
Your name is Hammer.
You're throwing a curveball.
But, again, it's, same thing like these other two guys is, there are flaws, sure, but there is, stuff that could be worked and polished on, and there's potential there. It's, what's the term? Tabula rasa. It's a blank slate, and you just can kind of work with what you have and mold a good pitcher. And there are definitely things that you would like to see in a pitcher in Hammer's profile.
I mean, it's always good to have as many of these guys in the system as possible. Most of them turn into plank or insert previous unsuccessful prep pitcher here, but sometimes you get something out of it.
All right, let's take a quick break here. And then we get back, we'll profile a few more draftees from the last couple of years. So we will be right back after this.
This episode is sponsored by Stash, a smarter, simpler way to start investing. With Stash, you can begin investing in a wide array of companies and diversified funds for as little as $5. Stash offers unlimited trading with no add-on trading commissions, so you can invest without worrying about getting nickel and dimed. You can choose your own stocks and funds to build a personalized portfolio or let Stash help build one for you. Stash demystifies investing with personalized financial guidance and education. They can even help you set up a plan for retirement saving. Stash will give you $10 today to get started investing. Just visit www.stash.app with the code SBNation. That's www.stash.app with code SBNation to get your $10 to start investing on Stash. Investment advisory services offered by Stash Investments LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. For disclosures and to learn how to claim your $10 to invest, visit www.stash.app.
Hey, I'm Spencer Hall.
I'm Holly Anderson.
I'm Ryan Nanny.
I'm Jason Kirk, and we're the hosts of the Shutdown Fullcast, your Avengers of College Football podcast. It says here in the script I'm to riff on what that means, and basically what I mean is it's all already spoiled.
Every Tuesday, we talk about everything from cooking disasters to pro wrestling to unfashionable pants we wore in middle school.
We also do talk about college football every now and then, like mascot fights, announcers fleeing the booth early, and unfashionable pants that coaches wear now.
If you want to take college football exactly as seriously as it should be taken, subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts or in your favorite podcast app.
Welcome back to From Complex to Queens. I'm Steve Saipa. I'm joined by Lucas Vlahos and Ken Levin, and we're just going over a bunch of guys in the DSL and GCL. We just went over a few guys that were drafted in the Rule 2 draft. Is it 2? I forget.
I have no idea.
4. Rule 4. Thank you.
What are rules 1 through 3?
That's a good question.
I can tell you what 5 is.
No, thanks. Yes, thanks.
But this next guy is a guy that I am particularly excited about. Blaine McIntosh. He was drafted in the 13th round of this year's draft. His father was a basketball player. And, you know, Blaine followed in his footsteps, but as a baseball player rather than a basketball player. And he had a commitment to Vanderbilt that the Mets were actually able to buy him out of, which is
surprising.
Yeah. I think that Allen's being able to sign was the big story, the biggest story, obviously, because of his upside. But the Mets getting McIntosh and buying him out of the Vanderbilt commitment is an unsung surprise of this year's draft.
It's like they structured their whole strategy around getting Allen. It's like, okay, you got him. And then and McIntosh just felt like a backup plan. So getting them both was kind of nice.
I don't think that, you know, McIntosh has that kind of upside.
Oh, of course not.
But I think part of, you know, part of the Mets being able to nab McIntosh is that the scholarship that he did get to Vanderbilt probably did not cover his whole ride. You know, whereas the $125,000 signing bonus that'll last a bit. But the Mets got him, and he appeared in 24 games this year for the GCL Mets, and he hit .228, .311, .228 with 11 walks and 22 strikeouts in 24 games. And obviously, you know, he's still very young, so there's a lot to work on here. But I like his swing. It's a very smooth, level, left-handed swing. Right now, you know, it's a kind of spray line drives kind of swing. And maybe in the future, he'll add a little bit of power. But his main thing, his main tool right now is his speed. He's an average to above average runner. He has a good plan in the outfield. You know, he has a lot of range. Still's working on his positioning. He has good instincts, good first step. And I like him as a center fielder.
Mm-hmm. I mean, go ahead.
I just hope that he doesn't develop on the kind of Champ Stewart plan where, you know, the speed is there, but, you know, and the defense is there, but nothing else really ever.
Hopefully he can hit.
Couldn't yeah. hit water if he fell out of a boat. I mean, in all likelihood, he loses some speed as he gets older. Probably winds up as a tweener type. Without enough power, and if unless the speed holds, perhaps not enough for center field. But that's still a good outcome. And maybe he just turns into a speedy slap hitter who plays good defense and is like a borderline starter or good defensive fourth outfielder.
Yeah, I mean, that's still a good outcome. That's still a useful Absolutely. Player.
That's the kind of player you hope your system produces, so you don't have to pay, and you could pay them the minimum and not have to pay them $10 million when you don't have any outfield depth.
That would be a useful thing to have.
Yep.
If his career does pan out, I feel like, you know, Kirk Newenhuis plays football. I believe that if McIntosh's career pans out, his sister was on American Idol, will be the new Kirk plays football.
Kirk was a fullback, you know, it was a real, real important part of his career or something, whatever.
All right, another guy that I am high on is Franklin Parra, who was drafted in the 11th round of the 2018 draft. Born in the Dominican Republic, and then he moved to Long Island in his high school days. And, you know, not being particularly fluent in English kind of made high school life difficult, but he kind of put all that aside and became a leader on the diamond because of just, you know, putting in the work and everything like that. And he had a commitment to San Jacinto Community College. He forewent it when the Mets gave him a $150,000 signing bonus. And best of all, of course, is the fact that he's a Mets fan growing up. Well, not growing up, but having, you know, gone to school in Long Island. So after the Mets signed him, they sent him to the GCL where he pitched 10 innings and he had a 0.90 ERA with 5 hits, 11 walks, and 10 strikeouts. And then he returned to the GCL this year and he spent the entire season there and he pitched 21 innings. And this year he put up a 2.57 ERA with 10 hits, 16 walks, and 29 strikeouts. And Parra is a left-hander, so that's always good. Fastball sits high 80s to low 90s, about 88 to 93 or so. And then he has curveball, slider, changeup. He's a bit more developed than some of the other pitchers that we were talking about here. They all kind of have glimpses of being decent pitches, but, you know, he's still kind of working on them, developing them into distinct pitches because the curveball and slider kind of bleed into each other a lot. And he's still working on his command, but there's a lot to like about him. You know, left-hander with that kind of velocity, it's, you know, good velocity for left-hander. The secondary is always good to see.
I wonder what's better. And I was not a high school baseball player, so I don't know what they actually go through. But I wonder if for some of these young guys, experimenting with lots of secondaries is good because you kind of learn to think about how you can manipulate the ball or whatnot, or if it's just better to find one breaking ball that works for you and focus on that entirely. I don't know. There's probably some pros and cons to each side there, but it's interesting that he's at least experimented with so many secondary offerings.
So I know that they, all of the, you know, like Driveline Pitching Twitter, you know, that group, talks about how secondaries should come along later and that you should just focus on throwing as hard as you can for a while.
I don't disagree with that idea either. Like that's
particularly because when you're trying to learn a changeup, supposedly, like, naturally from how your, like, brain works, you know, you start to compensate and not, you know, throw as max effort as you do just on, like, a subconscious level. Mm-hmm. So
I could buy into that.
But I could also see where the manipulation of the ball and, you know, how do you develop feel if not, you know, playing around with different ways of making the ball move, you know?
If nothing else, it demonstrates, like, some level of both curiosity and work ethic to me, yeah. I think. Like, you're both interested enough and have put enough time in that you're like, okay, if I do this to the ball, it does this, and if I do this, it does this instead, and you've practiced it enough that you're okay messing with them in different spots. So, I mean, I don't know. I'm sure there's it's probably a player-specific issue.
And you hear the term, like, pitching IQ a lot, and I think that, you know, something like that, messing around with grips, seeing what you have that, you know, worked for you, definitely falls into that category. And it's an important, you know, aspect of pitching because, you know, if you know, like, you know, sometimes if you do this to the ball, whatever, you can make a cut a little bit more or you can give a little bit more sink or a little bit more run. And, you know, there are days when you just don't have your stuff and that might come in handy.
Yep. I mean, I think
at the same time, though,
this.
At the same time, it's like, you know, these are guys that are very young, though. So I would think that that's kind of not more of a veteran thing to know. But, you know, when you're still, you know, 17, 18 year old kid, you're not really thinking of, you know, well, on the days when I don't have my fastball command, I need to know how to do this. So, right. You know.
Well, I do wonder if the increased amount of literature, both due to the Driveline guys and without starting a referendum on Trevor Bauer's stuff, but lots of his communications with the public or like Eno's articles where he talks about he had a really good article a couple months ago about how Scherzer like diversified his slider into three separate pitches almost that he uses in different ways, right? And I don't know that sort of writing, it was as prevalent 10 or even 5 years ago. So maybe some of these newer guys are coming up having read some of this stuff and thinking about it a little bit, which is interesting to me at least. I'm always interested in how like the different developmental paths and what these guys are thinking about as they're trying to improve.
I mean, I would hope so, because I am a proponent in those kinds of things, and it doesn't hurt the player, you know, it only makes them better, so.
Yeah, I'm a sucker for those stories, you know? Like, my favorite is, like, Drew Pomeranz has a curveball grip that, like, only his dad
has ever used. The unique grips are always the coolest thing.
And it's turned into, it's like weird. He like flicks the ball. It's like a knuckle curve grip, but he flicks out with his finger, with the finger that's turned into the ball. Yeah, and that's, you know, one of the better curveballs in baseball. Yep.
Dude just straight clowned people for 26 innings in relief last year with it.
Yeah.
We've gone way off topic here, sorry.
Well, not really, because hopefully this next guy will be clowning players for years to come, as quite possibly a reliever, and that is Josh Wolf, who the Mets signed who the Mets drafted second round this year, and then signed for $2.15 million. You know, we've talked a lot about Wolf, so I won't get into him in too much detail here. But what did he do this year? He was assigned to the GCL Mets, and he pitched a total of 8 innings, allowing 9 hits, walking 1, and striking out 12 with a 3.38 ERA. Again, numbers don't really matter much here, as much as just the overall package. But obviously, being drafted as a prep kid in the second round, and then being given a signing bonus, almost $1 million over slot value, you're good. And, you know, Wolf is pretty good.
I have a dumb question, and again, feel free to ridicule me. Like, I watch the videos of Wolf throwing, read his numbers, read the reports. What makes him $2 million better than the 3 other prep arms we just talked about? Or $2 million, however much more.
So probably how frequently he's able to sit, you know, in the 90s,
yep,
as opposed to the high 80s. The curveball is probably a little farther along. And also, like, I don't know if you've seen his body, but the kid's like rail thin.
Yeah. I mean,
so that's where projection comes from. And, you know, we can all talk about what actually the value of projection is, but that's where the $1 million comes from. The idea that he's already sitting a little more comfortably in the 90s rather than the 80s. And he's got so much room to add muscle and strength that the idea is maybe he'll throw 94, 95 in a way that the guys who are 6'9" and already filled out, you know, might not be able to dream on.
Feels like such a thin margin there, like 1 or 2 miles per hour, just totally altering the valuation. Not that I'm arguing it. I'm just saying it feels like such a fine line there.
Yeah, and also it has to do also a lot of things with just luck. I mean, you know, where you're born, he's from Texas, so obviously guys from Texas are getting a lot more light
Texas,
on
California,
them.
Florida.
Yeah, the warm weather states. Yeah.
Well, that was the conversation I was trying to push us towards there. It's like, how much of this is meaningful difference and how much of this is just happenstance or pure luck? Like, you got seen by – you pitched in this game where X scout was here and blah, 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 blah. I imagine both play a role.
Yes, both definitely do.
I'd also imagine that Wolf was probably at most, if not all, of the major showcases.
Yeah. I mean, even more so than.
I don't know if that's true for Jace Beck or Saul Gonzalez. So.
Absolutely fair.
But yeah, no. I mean, he is meaningfully better than the other pitchers, but
yes.
But yeah, there is a lot of that too. You know, just who sees him and when.
He looks, at least from his mechanics perspective, he looks very relievery to me.
Yeah. I think
he is
very
a Woods Richardson part two.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I think he's basically the same pitcher as Woods Richardson, just with more projection.
Yep. I totally agree.
Which is good. You get, you know, Allen and then a guy with a chance to start. And potential to be a pretty good reliever.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to question that draft pick at all. Like, that's still a good pick.
Yeah, the fact that everything worked out makes everything okay about it. So that is pretty much that's the, you know, do you guys think there are any other guys in the GCL that you'd want to go over in terms of guys that have been drafted last year or two? I was digging through everything, and those are really the only names that came to mind. So
yeah, I think we have a lot of interesting names from the IFA.
Yeah.
So
did we not mention was Jalen Palmer in the GCL?
No. Kingsport.
He was in Kingsport. Damn it.
I mean, we could talk about him if you want.
I mean, he's in that same tier of players, but he's not in the GCL, so not worth it.
But he's more advanced than
these
couple.
He's basically, I think, the Blaine McIntosh from the 2018 draft.
Yep, exactly. Yep.
You know.
He's definitely more, I think there's more power projection there than with McIntosh. Mm-hmm. Probably like a more upside as opposed to the floor with McIntosh. But I mean, for such a weak system, there's a almost surprising number of somewhat intriguing guys at this level. Like you kind of expect it to be a barren wasteland, and it's not.
Yeah, I mean, don't know if it's just kind of confirmation bias on our part, but yeah, but there's a bunch of
guys. I'd assume most teams.
Yeah, most other teams GCL, have this kind
DSL
of.
GCL would be similar, you know.
Yeah. Every team has a J-spec.
Yep.
I mean, the Mets have like three of them.
Fair.
Hopefully they all pan out.
We got problem. Three viable fifth starters. That's more than we currently have.
Yeah. So, there's a bunch now of guys that are were signed as international free agents for varying amounts at different times that were in the DSL for some period of time over the 2019 season, and some of them made it to the GCL. I think one guy even made it to Kingsport, but spent majority of his season, in the lower levels. So we'll just run over some of these guys too. First one, and of course, I feel like there is a lot less information about these players because of the fact that they are in a kind of playing in a black hole of information in the Dominican Summer League and then the GCL. It's much harder to get reports on these guys just because of the distance, and a lot of times too it was language barrier. But first guy is Robert Colina, who is from Venezuela, and he was signed on July 2nd, 2017, so a few years ago, and he got an $85,000 signing bonus. And he was a reliever and a starter this year in the DSL and the GCL. Put up okay numbers. He had a 3.57 ERA in 41.1 innings, allowing 42 hits, walking 13, and striking out 35. And numbers are not that important for the guys down here, because as we were talking about earlier, numbers don't really matter. There's just so much variance. But important about Colina is that he has a fastball. It can touch as high as 94 miles an hour, which is pretty good. And he is 5'11". So, in theory, there might be some additional growth in there to maintain that kind of velocity. In addition, throws a curveball and a changeup. But that's really the extent of the information that I was able to turn up about him.
Yep.
But the fact that, 94 miles an hour fastball, always good to see. Next guy is a guy who was on our top 25 prospect list last year, will be again, Stanley Consuegra, signed at the DR for $500,000 in the 2017 to 2018 IFA class. Projectable frame. He has a good hit tool right now. He's 6'2", 170 pounds, so he'll probably add some muscle and add some additional in-game power. And he's got okay speed, good arm, just a guy that, you know, is a lot to like in many different aspects of his game.
Yep. I, it's unfortunate he was hurt for so long.
Yeah, he had a knee injury this year, and he had surgery that basically kept him out for the entire season.
I don't think it was anything super major. Like, no, wasn't like an ACL or anything. It was just
as far as I know, no. So
just a scope.
Next up is Josh Cornelli. He's a Venezuelan pitcher. Again, not too much information about him, but he posted good numbers as a swingman. He had a 4.54 ERA in 35 innings with the GCO Mets. Allowed 43 hits, walked 8, and struck out 40. So 6'2", 175 pounds, so there's room to grow. And he throws a fastball, slider, curveball combination. So just another, you know, name that's out there to kind of might become, you know, might blossom into something interesting.
Might get traded for, what the hell?
Wilmer Font.
Wilmer Font, thank you.
Mm-hmm. So you never know.
And then turn into a top prospect for the Rays because, you know.
Why not? Next guy is Kennedy Corona. He's a Venezuelan outfielder. He was signed, he's an older signing. He was 19 and he was signed at the end of the 2018 to 2019 signing period. He made his professional debut this year with the DSL Mets and he made it all the way to Brooklyn this year. Just a couple of games at the end of the year, but because he's a little bit older, they kind of pushed him faster through the system. But there's some stuff to like. He's a bit undersized. He's 5'11", 185 pounds, and he might not grow or put on, you know, that much more muscle. But he doesn't have a single kind of standout tool, but there's a solid, you know, hit tool, decent amount of hitting for power. He has a decent amount of speed. He has a pretty good eye for someone with as little experience as him. And because of his speed, the Mets have used him in center. You know, he's played all three outfield positions, but majority of his time has come in center, so it's always a good sign. But I liked him, actually. I saw him – I don't know if it was the game – I don't know if it was in the playoff game that we saw Ken.
I saw him in a game that Batty was also playing in.
Right. He only played, I think, he only got into four games and they were all at the end of the year.
I don't think I saw him swing the bat. I think he walked on like four pitches.
Yeah, the game that I saw, he walked twice, I believe it was, so.
There's like some random Corona admin, Corona marketing intern who also went to a Brooklyn game was just praying this guy makes it to the majors. The promotion writes itself. The commercial writes itself.
Yeah, I mean, it was a good eye. The eye surprised me, and that's one of the kind of harder things to develop. Mm. And, you know, just to see a guy, you know, a kid really, but see someone, you know, his age with that decent of an eye and that little experience, it bodes well, I think.
Where do you think they start him next year?
Gotta be Colombia, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it was only literally four games in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Awesome.
He's going to be a little old for Brooklyn next year, though.
He'll be 20, I believe.
You could, start him at Columbia, and maybe if he's just really struggling, put him in Brooklyn when their season starts.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on how he does in extended spring training, I guess.
That's true, too.
If he responds, then you could send him to Columbia, and what's the worst thing that's going to happen? If you have to send him down, you have to send him down fine.
Yeah. I'm generally, I think, more in favor of being of aggressive promotions, so I'd like so send them to Columbia. Screw it.
All right, let's take another break here, and when we get back, we'll go over a couple more of these IFA guys. So we will be right back. Welcome back to From Complex to Queens. I'm Steve Saipa. I'm joined by Lucas Vlahos and Ken Lavin. And we're going over our deep dive of interesting names in the Met system. And we went over a bunch of guys that were drafted, and now we're reviewing guys that have signed from Dominican Republic mostly. It seems like the Mets really have a strong pipeline there, and Venezuela as well. And the next player is Adrian Hernandez, another one that was on our top prospect list last year, will be again this year.
Oh, yes.
Signed during the 2017 to 2018 international period, signing period, and given a $1.5 million bonus. He was sent stateside this year. He went to the GCL Mets, but he only appeared in four games before he injured his leg and missed the rest of the season after those four games.
What a four games they were, though.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that was
a very fun four games.
But, you know, the biggest thing about him right now is he's only 5'9", 210 pounds. So don't know how much more physical growth there is there. He might be maxed out. But his game is centered around, you know, strength, and he has plenty of that. Good bat speed, good raw physical strength equals, you know, plus raw power. And his ability to hit is a little raw. There's a lot of uppercut in his swing. And obviously, you know, he's still working on his ability to recognize spin. But once some of that comes along, you know, you marry that with that power, and that's, you know, a possibly exciting player. And, you know, he's a bit short and stout, but he has good speed. You know, he kind of has not the quick twitch speed, but the afterburners. And should be, you know, able to stay in the outfield, probably center field for at least the next couple of years, since the arm isn't really above average or anything like that, so might not profile great in right. But, you know, if you could stay in center field for a few more years with that kind of power potential, that's an exciting player.
Yeah, there's value in being able to fake center, you know.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, especially nowadays where positioning is much more of a thing, and, you know.
Well, not in the Mets organization. It is.
Right, true, true. Well, when we invariably trade him somewhere.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
That
more
organization.
Like, damn it. No, I was trying to come up with an analogy to Diaz and Cano, and I got nothing. Trade me.
All right, Ken, just you and me, I guess, now.
Bye, Lucas.
Yep, I've been traded. Which one of you is getting promoted and which one is getting extended? The true questions.
we'll have to go on.
Write to us with your.
Yeah, send us an email with your remote extend trade for the three hosts of this podcast.
The real answer: trade all of us.
Yep. The true. Oh God. We like Hernandez. Please stay healthy next year. You and Consuegra, please stay healthy.
Cool. Mm-hmm.
It'll be fun.
Another older player is Braylon Gonzalez. He was signed out of the Dominican Republic during the 2017 to 2018 international free agent period. He's a left-hander. He played for the GCL Mets this year. Posted good numbers. He has a good frame, 6'2", 180 pounds, so there might be an additional growth in his body, and that'll kind of be key to his future because the fastball sits in the high 80s, you know, just scrapes 90. So if he gets more velocity to that, you know, his role might expand. But if he isn't, he's probably going to be limited to just facing left-handers because they did a lot worse against him thanks to his slider, which is like above average right now and could possibly become a plus pitch in the future. Mm-hmm. As he, you know, gets more professional tutelage and such. But another interesting arm down there. Another player is William Lugo. And the Mets used some of the money they got when they I should say not money, but some of the extra room to spend when they traded Jairus Familia to the Athletics in 2018. They were able to sign Lugo with that extra kind of budget space. He signed for $475,000. So that's almost half of that million that they were able to use. So he was signed in late August of 2018. So he didn't play at all, and he made his debut this year. He skipped over the DSL completely, and he made his professional debut with the GCL team at the age of 17. Numbers weren't that great, but it's a good profile. He's 6'3", 215 pounds, so thick, muscular from top to bottom. And he has present plus power, raw power, and with some additional, you know, maybe a little bit of growth and really more mechanical refinements, he might be able to translate some of that into in-game power, which is great. And he has a pretty good eye. He's able to recognize spin, and that's, you know, another good skill to have for a player that's as young as he is. And he is primarily a third baseman right now, but, you know, like we said, his body is kind of stout, so if he starts adding bad muscle, he might be forced to move to first base if he loses some of that mobility. But he has the profile to fit at first base with that raw power.
Could we describe him as chunky?
Yeah, I could. I will allow that. Another guy is David Marcano. He was, I don't know if he was literally the youngest player or one of the youngest players in the 2017 to 18 international free agent class that was signed in 2017. But the Mets had to wait until he turned 16 in late August to sign him. So, you know, a lot has been said about all these pre-signing agreements with, you know, literal kids, and this is definitely that in action. Mm-hmm. But the Mets gave him a $500,000 signing bonus. Obviously, they like what they saw in him. And the numbers have not been, you know, that great. But again, the numbers don't matter too much. But this year in the DSL, he had a 3.07 ERA in 41 innings, allowing 31 hits, walking 23, and striking out 32. But it's the profile that prompted the Mets to give him so much money. The fastball, he's a right-hander. So right now, fastball sits in the high 80s to low 90s, tops out about 92 with a lot of life. And he's 6'3", 180 pounds. So again, it is very conceivable that he adds some additional velocity to that. And he has, he complements it with a curveball and changeup. And they're both kind of advanced, the curveball especially. It's a 12-6 breaker. It's, you know, average-ish about right now and could develop into an above-average pitch. Whereas the curveball, you know, it's still kind of okay, you know, but he's shown a feel for it. But when you're 17 years old, you know, it's fine if you're not throwing a good changeup. Mm-hmm. And he's comparable to the Jace Becks and the Franklin Paras, you know, just extremely, extremely young. Another guy is Federico Polanco, and he is actually the cousin of Ronnie Mauricio. So it's always good to, you know, Mauricio has developed well, so you always hope then that Polanco can follow in that same path. But he signed for a $325,000 bonus. And he made his DSL debut in 2018. He repeated it in this season, 2019, and then he was sent stateside about mid-year. Numbers were not that great, but it's the profile. There's a lot of 10th losing potential in there. He's 6'1", 160 pounds, so you hope on a lot of growth. And he kind of has good bat speed. Makes good contact, is good hit tool. Not a lot of power, obviously, because he's kind of on the small side, but, you know, like you were saying, if he grows, adds some more muscle, some of the doubles and line drives that he hits become homers. And he has a pretty good approach, you know, with in terms of his plan at the plate and recognizing pitches and things of that nature. So it's a good foundation, and you just kind of want to hope on that additional physical growth there. Mm-hmm. And then he's defensively, he kind of has a mishmash of experience, second base, third base, shortstop, but he's really best at second base because his arm is not
great.
The arm is not great.
Not the physical tool shed his cousin is.
No, definitely not. One physical tool shed, though, is Alexander Ramirez, who was the Mets' big signing during this year's IFA class, 2019 to 2020 class. Very athletic, 6'3", 170 pounds. So again, you're going to be betting on additional growth and muscle, putting on muscle. But it's a good eye at the plate, an advanced understanding of the strike zone. He flashes, you know, decent power. And then the physical build suggests that, you know, he should be able to add more to it. And he has, you know, the body and the skill set to play center for, you know, years to come because he has a lot of speed. He projects as, you know, an above average runner. He has plenty of range. And, you know, with more time and professional coaching, he'll take better routes and see the ball off the bat better in the outfield. And hopefully he sticks at center. And a guy with that kind of, you know, hit tool and power and everything in center is an exciting prospect.
There's a lot of ways this can go. We basically know nothing about him yet.
No, I mean, he has yet to play a professional game.
Yep. So the range of outcomes is literally like Francisco Alvarez and then, you know, Kenny Hernandez.
Every DSL signing you've ever forgotten about.
But he has a Beltrani feel, which is...
Yeah, you know, the fun. Videos I've seen, I like the swing a little bit. Reminds me a bit of Mauricio. Whippy.
It's what you want to see in your top IFA prospect. Another dude is Eduardo Salazar. He was signed out of Venezuela in 2017. The Mets signed him to a $125,000 bonus. This season, he played in the GCL for a couple of games, and then he lost the rest of the season to injury. And in the games that he did play, not the best numbers, but he has a good hit tool, he's a loose swing, and he's shown the ability to make some contact. And once he starts using his lower half better, because his swing is all, you know, upper half, he should start hitting for a little bit more power. And then he's 6'3", 180 pounds. So if he adds, again, if he adds a little bit of weight and muscle, that should also help with the power as well. Mm-hmm. And he's an outfielder by trade. He's more professional experience right now in center, but he profiles better in a corner, particularly left, because he doesn't have super, super duper range for center. And his arm is just kind of average, so not the best in right. Another intriguing guy, more so, I guess, because of his origins, whatever, is Warren Saunders. And he was signed last year out of Bahamas. And he's the second Bahamian player that the Mets have had. Champ Stewart, who we mentioned earlier, was the first. And he made his professional debut this year. He was playing the GCL Mets. He hit pretty good numbers. He hit 323, 397, 386. But the problem is because of his where he's from, he's a bit on the older side. He was 20. So you balance that out, though, with the fact that he doesn't have as much experience as a player who is 20. You know, he's maybe more closer to a 16 or 17-year-old, baseball-wise. But he's extremely athletic, 6'3", 190 pounds, very athletic frame. His swing I like. It's built for power. It's a smooth left-handed swing with loft. And, you know, just like he's raw at the plate, although he is raw in the field, the Mets are kind of basically testing him everywhere over the course of the season. And he spent the majority of his time this past year playing at third and at first.
So absolutely worthwhile. I like I feel like a lot of teams are very risk averse in terms of moving guys around in the low minors in terms of positions, and it seems like it's oftentimes worthwhile to at least like see if they could stick somewhere. So
yeah, I mean, with a guy like, you know, he's there is such little, you know, baseball experience in him that this is a signing that is basically like, hey, he hit okay in the Bahamas in, you know, their junior league, and he's super athletic, so let's just flip
give it
know,
a go.
Give it a go, exactly. Another guy is Yohander Suarez. He was born in Venezuela. He was signed in 2018, and he's right-handed pitcher. The fastball sits about 87 or so, you know, in the high 80s, but he's 6'3", 180 pounds, so hopefully there will be some additional velocity coming as he adds muscle. And then he supplements that with a curveball and a changeup that he's able to command. So it's good to see the ability to, you know, hit the spots and everything for somebody that low in the system. Mm-hmm. Another exciting name now is Freddy Valdez, who was one of the top rookies available during the 2018 to 2019 international free agent class last year. And the Mets signed him, you know, 16-year-old out of the Dominican for $1.45 million. And he made his professional debut this year. He spent the majority of the year in the DSL, but he got a cup of coffee late in the season with the JCL Mets. And, you know, he hit well, actually extremely well, really. In 57 games in DSL, he had 5 homers and stole 6 bases. And then the GCL, he went 4-for-10 with a double and a home run, and then 3 walks and 3 strikeouts. So,
yeah, the plate discipline stuff is I believe what quote unquote stabilizes the fastest, and I think is the most interesting for a guy this young. So that's
I mean the sample size is
the sample good. Size is still big.
Yeah, of course,
nothing, but the fact that he walks at all is like because a lot of these Dominican prospects come out just hacking.
Right, quote, unquote, you can't walk off the island.
Right. So yep. I think that's encouraging.
Yeah, I'm very interested to see what Valdez looks like this year.
Yeah, he is.
I like the power a lot. I like, like we've talked about, the plate discipline. You know, basically all of my caveats with him are regarding, you know, scouting DSL stat lines, since we obviously have nothing really to go on in terms of real looks, so.
Yeah, plenty of power. 6'3", 210, lots of strength, lots of power.
I forget where he landed on our top 25. I don't remember.
He's in there.
He's there.
I don't recall. He is there. I don't remember off the top of my head either, but he is there. And it's an exciting profile.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he is indeed there. Can confirm.
Okay.
One guy that is not there is Jordani Ventura. He was signed the Dominican Republic in 2018. He's a right-handed pitcher. He's a kind of lanky 6 foot, 160 pounds. So he probably is still growing. And the fastball sits about 90 with some arm side run. So if you can add some mass and strength to increase that fastball velocity, it's an interesting fastball that he's got. And then he throws a curveball that's pretty advanced and polished for someone with his age and experience level. He's 18 years old, so always good to see. And our last guy here, and an interesting story. I mean, it's an interesting player profile, but an interesting story also, is Fernando Villalobos. Now, a little bit of a backstory here. In July 2017, when the 2017 to 18 IFA period opened up, the Cubs signed a Mexican right-handed pitcher, Florencio Serrano. And that year, the Cubs had penalties for signing IFA players. Because of some shady accounting practices between the Cubs and Mexico's Mexican League of Baseball, the Cubs are able to circumvent the cap on spending that they were subjected to by MLB.
An MLB team did something unethical?
Mm-hmm. Believe it or not. Mm-hmm. And that basically got exposed, and it set in motion a chain of events that saw his contract nullified, and it put a freeze on MLB ball club signing any players that were involved with MLB, Liga Mexicana Baseball players. So Fernando Villalobos was one of the many guys that kind of got caught in limbo because of that. He was expected to sign with the Brewers that year, but he was unable to sign with them before the freeze was put in place. And he was just kind of left in the wind because, the Brewers were unable to sign him. So finally, this past March, the commissioner lifted the ban on signing players affiliated with the Mexican League. And the Mets were able to sign him using some of the extra space that they acquired from the Orioles when they sent Keon Broxton there in May. The Mets signed him for $450,000, so majority of that $500,000. He was assigned to the DSL team this year. Didn't hit that great, but numbers don't really matter. He's a catcher. He has a simple left-handed swing that's really suited for hitting for average right now. He's actually a decent runner for a catcher, it's always fun to see decent running catchers, but it's just kind of fringe average right now, and it'll probably get worse as he gets older because he's 17 years old, and if you're not that great of a runner now, you're probably not going to get better in the future unless you go to Barwis, so who knows.
Send him to Barwis.
Yeah, he's equally raw behind the plate, but again, nothing unusual for a young catcher. He's pretty mobile, but he needs to work on just catching and framing. And, the arm is only average, but it's augmented by his pop times. They're usually slightly average to above average, so it's good to see, that he's able to compensate for that. But then again, at the same time, as he gets a little bit older, he's gonna, he might put on some bad muscle. Catchers kind of do that a lot. But catchers are weird, so who knows. But he's a guy that gets forgotten about, I think, and he's a pretty interesting signing.
Yeah, I gotta admit, I wasn't even that. I didn't know the full story on him coming into this.
Yeah, I didn't know. I knew nothing about the whole Mexican League banning thing. I just know that he was a kind of a name that was still left unsigned when the Mets were able to pick him up, and I was just like, okay, interesting.
I feel better about it knowing that there's a story there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It just goes to show that a lot of that these young kids are always the casualties when rich people are screwing around.
Yep. I'm trying to remember the last time the Mets had a notable signing from the Mexican leagues. I'm not remembering anything really.
Juan Uriarte is from there. Mm. Another catcher.
Yeah.
I know Oliver Perez is Mexican. Mm-hmm. I don't think, and obviously he wasn't signed or anything by the Mets, and it was already a major leaguer when he came to the Mets.
Yep.
And we don't really want to remember his time on the Mets.
No, we don't.
I'm not really sure. But, I mentioned earlier, a lot of these guys, the pipeline seems to be strongest in the Dominican Republic and Venezuela right now with the Mets.
Which makes sense given how much money they've poured into the Dominican complex. And
mm-hmm. It's shocking that when you invest in a talent avenue, you actually are able to add talent. If only they could learn from that lesson and apply it elsewhere on the roster.
Go figure. No learning occurs here, Lucas.
It's the Mets, you know, yeah. I'm learning.
Anyone have any last words for the week? I guess not.
Yeah.
No,
I
nothing.
I rarely do.
Well, if anyone has any questions, comments, you can send us an email at our email address from complexthequeens@gmail.com. And you could follow us individually on Twitter and shoot us questions there. I'm at Steve Sipa. Lucas is at elvlahos343. And Ken is at ken1191. You could subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts from and rate and review it. And thank you, everybody, for listening, of course. And we will be back next week. We'll do some Rule 5 draft preview. Hopefully the Mets shed some of the kind of dead weight on the 40-man, because Rule 5 is always exciting. You never know what you might get, and there are the occasional gems.
Bring me Brett Cumberland.
So until next week, love the Mets. Love the Mets.